Everyone is alone. Everyone is empty. People no longer have need of others. You can always find a spare for any talent. Any relationship can be replaced. I had gotten bored of a world like that, but for some reason, the thought that someone other than you might kill me never occurred to me. Let that recital settle in your mind, because I often carry it with me as a reminder of how important it is to maintain my individuality and my independence. You don't have to be an anime fan to appreciate the work of a great character, but as an anime fan, it's been rare for me to find characters that can truly resonate with me. Good, evil, it doesn't matter. I mean, the terms good and evil are arbitrary. Abstractions of ideals that we conform to when the situation is convenient. I always feel that the scene in The Dark Knight where the Joker is being interrogated by Batman, or where he's interrogating Batman, because I've pointed out in previous recordings how Batman really isn't saying anything in that scene. It's the Joker who is doing most of the talking, almost like he's putting Batman through a psychological evaluation of the morals in which he conforms to, or objectifies himself to. In either case, when it comes to great characters, whether they are good or evil is irrelevant. Okay, maybe that's a little biased and even one-sided, but I think that should come secondary when looking at the traits that make them unique and truly individualistic. And obviously, the Joker being one of them, Hannibal Lecter also being another, because even though by society standards they are considered evil, immoral, and even demonic, we have to ask ourselves, what is good and evil? Because, or what is a society? I mean, society is just a collection of individuals who all mutually agree on what is deemed good and what is deemed evil. But because those ideas are constantly shifting on circumstantial matters, it really just gives that statement the Joker made to Batman when he said, their morals, their code, it's a bad joke, dropped at the first sign of trouble. Only as good as the world allows them to be. And in many ways, the character Shogo Makishima from Psycho Pass Season 1, and before I get anybody hooked on the show Psycho Pass or turned on to it, especially anime fans, I want to advise you, watch only Season 1. The other seasons after it are shit. Absolute. Anti-intellectual shit. Now, Season 1 is a masterpiece because not only does it have a great idea of a society with an Orwellian and even Huxellian, I don't know if anybody's come up with that term, if I'm the first, I'm glad to have that honor, but it has a Huxellian nature because it's a system, it's a technocratic society where a hyper-intelligent AI known as Sybil dictates the lives of the citizens. Picks out what kind of job they're going to have, what kind of career they're going to live by. It even tries to eliminate the idea of stress. Basically, it's a society free of stress. Now, on the surface, that would sound like a fantastic idea because nobody really likes to be stressed, especially in these current times where we're in a constant state of panicked anxiety. But that doesn't change the fact that other studies show that moderate stress can actually boost your immune system, because look at our species. We're Homo sapiens. We came from a species of survivors, a species of hunters and gatherers, and you'd have to be a moron to think that they weren't in a state of anxiety or constant stress when they were trying to just look for basic things like food, shelter, and just genuine good health. Now, when those basic needs are met, what do? And that's probably the reason a lot of people are in a state of complete utter anxiety. When all the basic human needs are met, you're only left with a number of problems to focus your attention on. And if those problems aren't significant enough to really constitute the anxiety, you can embark on all sorts of self-destructive or self-annihilating patterns. Now, what do I mean by self-annihilation? I mean it within the sense of the abstract. I've mentioned Alan Moore in previous podcast episodes because I think that what he said was, and we once said in a documentary that was centered on him, was that he wasn't just necessarily worried about the idea of a conformist society, but he was mostly, no, more of a society trying to destroy the individual, but he was also concerned about that the society that we're living in is eliminating the idea of the self. I mean, essentially, it's eliminating individuality, the ability to think for yourself, to question things, or have an idea, or to self-reflect on who you are, or what it means to who you are. The neuroscientist and philosopher Sam Harris, even though I haven't followed him recently, once said that the idea of the self is just an idea. The idea of who you are as a person is just an idea that you, for your own interaction with the world directly, for your own perception, your own subjective experience, is just an idea interpreted through that experience. You have formed it as a result of your experiences through your senses. In the process of forming that individuality, your self-awareness allows you to dictate how you view things, how you approach them, and how you carry on. And when it comes to a character like Shogo Makashima, he is the antagonist of Psychopath Season 1. His main goal, well, it is essentially to bring down the civil system because he thinks it is dehumanizing to the idea of human individuality. He essentially sees it as a crippling social factor. He sees it as something that will destroy the idea of human identity. One of his most illuminating quotes, besides the one I recited, and granted I recited it because I wanted to be as direct and authentic as possible, or at least not sound like a moron who was spitballing the quotes of a well-written character. But he did state also that he believes people are only happy when they're truly able to be themselves. But that's another question we have to look into. What does it really mean to be yourself? Can you truly have the freedom to express yourself when there are so many detrimental factors within your environment that shape the decisions you make? And some of those decisions are based on how people judge you, criticize you, or who in particular is evaluating you, because it's very rare for a person to truly be by themselves. Solitude is something that is frowned upon by mass groups. It's attacked, it's deemed something as abnormal, yet we can look to a lot of great artists and figures who admired and loved solitude. Arthur Schopenhauer, Charles Bukowski, flawed as they were as individuals, especially for some of the nasty things they did, they at least saw the beauty in solitude. They understood the dangers of crowd psychology and how that was detrimental to the idea of forming your own sense of a self, rather than allowing an entire group to, or groupthink, or the phenomenon of groupthink to cripple your ability to truly understand and know yourself by being alone with yourself. And only by being alone with yourself can you truly know who you are. Hell, another great anime character from a show like Naruto, Itachi, once said, "A man does not truly know who they are until the very end." And obviously he's referring to the final moments of life, where a person, as they die, they just let go of all the anxieties, all the fears they had prior to that moment of death, prior to that moment of that loss of time they dreaded and felt that they could use every moment more efficiently. Where they are truly honest with who they were, and they embraced the inevitable infinity of death. I know it's a little melodramatic, but when you're talking about something as significant and worth talking about like death, you really have to look at it in a very self-reflective angle, because we don't know what happens after we die. Some of us have a better idea, or at least we think we have a better idea of what happens after we die. Yet all of us don't like taking that gamble. None of us really like rolling that dice. At least not willy-nilly, unless you're suicidal or just straight out crazy. And I think I've already gotten into enough deep territory to then start questioning what is crazy. But then again, I'm talking about characters who I use through their own moral complexity to question the notion of sanity, because, as I mentioned, Shogo Makashima is the antagonist of Psychopath Season 1. And I will not lie, he is a psychopath. He is a very, well, not very violent. He does a lot of violent things, but it doesn't seem like he indulges in them for just simply fetishistic pleasures. Although I would never say that the way he handles a shaving, an old school shaving razor in such a clean fashion. He does it rather gruesomely, but with an elegance, almost like it's calculated, it's premeditated in a way where he just has a preference for that weapon, as opposed to indulging in some sick fetishistic exercise of a psychopathy. But at the same time, he's also a very self-reflective individual who understands the hypocrisies of modern society, the false notion, the arbitrary notions of morality, and how they're constantly shifting, and how they conflate, they make us conform to this social standard where we have to behave in a certain way, either to get the approval of others or just to be allowed to participate in a society that is very delicate and hanging by the kind of thread that can crumble with just the push of one big button and all goes down the fucking toilet. And I found that very interesting about him, especially in his final moments in the show when he's dying and bleeding out. He's self-reflecting, and when he makes that statement that everyone is alone, everyone is empty, we don't really need each other anymore, while then going on to the simplicity of how, or just the simple nature of how people's lives have become so easy, so simple, so technologically advanced that the things that were considered difficult in prior generations have become almost irreversibly solvable, that it just kind of empties them, almost takes away the strain of the difficulty needed to cultivate a sense of character. He's pretty much saying that every majority of people have become so hollow, so empty, and that their lives have become so simplistic and easy to live that the idea of being challenged or facing any hardship has been eradicated to the point where they're not capable of becoming people, that they're just hollow shells. And sad to say, there is something very robotic when analyzing a human being from that angle, because I mean, I don't know if I've ever brought up Blade Runner before in my prior episodes, but one of the misconceptions I had about the replicants in the Blade Runner franchise was that they were robots. But then I learned that they were just merely artificial humans with synthetic components. In fact, those synthetic components actually outmatched the ones we have as organic beings. They could have sex, they could orgasm, they could pretty much do all the things that you wouldn't imagine a robot doing, but a human would seek being within the capabilities of a human being. And yet they were superior. They were stronger, faster, more intelligent, yet they could be controlled for a limited time until they started developing greater self-awareness, which is something the humans that developed them couldn't necessarily predict to an exact model. Still, the idea that I thought the replicants were robots does put the notion of robot to question, because what is a robot? I mean, on surface level, or on a cultural surface level, it's a metallic being with computer with a robot with mechanical components that allow it to function. And yet, if it was to mi like a computer or any mechanical device, if it was missing a major component that was part of its function, it would just either break down or function less efficiently. But human beings have a similar crutch. A human being can't function the same if they didn't have a heart, a brain, pack of kidneys, or even a liver. In fact, life would be very difficult, and it would be only a matter of time before their lifespan ended, or they would just live a very tortured existence. It really depends on the human being or what part they'd be missing. So in a way, human beings are just as much as robots as regular robots are, or the traditional notion of what we view to be a robot. Now, our traditional view of robots has usually been that they are just mechanical beings with no souls, no personalities, no ability to self-reflect or generate self-awareness like human beings. Strangely enough, when I look at that quote by Shogo Makashima, all it does is just tell me that the world he saw was a world filled with organic human beings who were pretty much turning into robots. the very civil system that he despised and hated for its ability to cripple the notion of the self was eradicating the idea of a human being's ability to become a self and become individualistic. And part of his plan to destroy the civil system is to tempt or instigate the kind of chaos within individuals that didn't necessarily fit into the standards of the system, but were able to conform to it by hiding their true selves. He basically called it the splendor of pupil souls, their true selves. Granted, these individuals that he tempted and even baited into committing violent and evil acts or just simply indulging in these sick vices that modern society would frown upon were twisted, but they were being their true selves in those moments. And some of them ended up being absolute hypocrites in the end. Still, the fact that Shogo's intention was to bring that side out of people is fascinating because he wanted to see something genuinely real as opposed to the hollow goodness that society was practicing. I guess a great comparison with another great character that exemplifies the same traits as Shogo Makashima, or at least the realization of what he was trying to do with these experimental people, was the character Alex DeLarge from A Clockwork Orange. I don't know how many of you listening have read the Clockwork Orange novel. It's really good. It's very similar to the movie, although the ending has changed a bit. But overall, it is pretty much the same. Now, for those of you who have never visited Clockwork Orange, the novella or the film, I highly advise you to stop this video and just go watch it because it is fantastic. But if you're still curious and willing to suffer the syndrome of spoilers, well, it's basically about a psychopath who rapes, kills, and just indulges in some of the sickest vices that a society could frown upon. Now, you've obviously seen how critical I am of modern society, but that doesn't mean that I'm condoning the behavior of a guy who rapes women, beats them to death, or just does all sorts of fucked up shit for his sycophantic amusement. But the interesting thing about A Clockwork Orange is that, twisted as Alex is, he is the hero of that story. And I don't mean hero in the context of him just being a protagonist, which is the character of who the story is told. Because a lot of people also conflate the idea of the protagonist with the hero. They think that because a character is the protagonist, they are the heroic figure of the story, when they're not. Most of the time. They're just simply the character whose point of view the story is told. Alex is an exception because he's told, you know, he's the character who's observing the events of the story, but he is the hero, but he's the, what I would label a non-heroic hero. I mean, he is the most moral in the sense that as evil as his actions are, they are coming from him. The society he lives in is very authoritarian, very dictatorial by the standards of how people behave, because a lot of the moral characters in the film A Clockwork Orange and the book are just being good because it's what society tells them to be. They're being good because they're trying to avoid punishment, because they're afraid of being punished or facing the kinds of repercussions that would land them in the kind of circumstances he's landed upon just because he was caught. I guess you could put it like this, is because he's caught raping and killing. No, he's caught killing a woman and he ends up going to prison. But prior to that, he was doing the same thing over and over again, but he just never got caught. And even when he was able to get the suspicions of a representative from, I guess, the prison he was in before the beginning of the story, I don't remember because it's been several years since I've seen the film, but I guess the film implies in that one scene, you know what I'm talking about, that the representative he has watching over him, even though he's trying to keep him in good behavior, probably molested him. But because he's able to conceal his own bad actions, and to a better degree than Alex could if he was put in the circumstances that character was put in, he's still able to get away with it. And that makes you evaluate the morality of modern society. Are people good just because they're being watched? Are they being good because it's what society demands and because they're able to avoid detection? I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of good people out there, but I'm sure that they've probably come in a moment where they're tempted to do something bad. But the question is, because did they choose not to do that evil action because they genuinely have come to realize that it is bad, or because the circumstances increase the likeliness of them being caught? Again, I'm not well, I haven't said it before, but I'm saying it now. I'm not advocating for anybody to do anything bad at a particular moment just because the circumstances benefit them. But I do ask that you reflect that the next time you're put in a position where you're tempted to do something bad, in addition to thinking about the consequences of the actions you may or may not take, think about why you are taking them or not taking them. And then I guess it's that self-awareness is that I think that level of self-awareness is incremental to forming the kind of human individuality a character like Makashima admired and sought. Because when he was stating that any relationship can be replaced with just a simple click, just shows you how even the social fabric of humanity itself became so distant and empty to him that he got bored of a world like that. That's why most of the characters he's with in the show, like either his associates or Shinya Kogami, the main hero of the story, are people who are at his intellectual level. Now, Shinya Kogami is a heroic figure, but he has also anti-heroic qualities because he doesn't live within the realms of the law. He is basically that hero that does go with a Wild West approach. And there is something interesting about when Shogo Makashima laments, this is the idea that someone other than Shinya Kogami killing me had never crossed my mind. Now, Shogo Makashima's plan was to bring down the civil system, but obviously he was self-aware and smart enough to know that the risks he was taking were life and death, and that there was a good chance he was going to die. But, like a man of good taste and intellectual vigor, he also chose a great opponent, and obviously that's what he sought in Shinya Kogami. And for all I know, he probably set things up that if he did fail, the best thing he could hope for was to be killed by someone he personally admired. And the show spares nothing in showing how much he admires Shinya Kogami. He toys with him, he beats him severely when they're fighting, but obviously there's a level of respect that he has with Shinya Kogami as opposed to other characters. Hell, before while he's giving his evil villain monologue, and yes, even a character like Shogo Makashima is not above the old James Bond villain monologue where he states, "No, I would love," where he pretty much says, "Oh, I would love nothing more than to spend all night discussing books with you, but you see, I have plans to make." And then he does talk. Well, he didn't really get a chance to explain the details of the plan, but he was in monologue territory. So there is some taste and compatibility with that character. Still, I like the fact that he had chosen, in addition to being self-aware enough to understand that as well coordinated and well planned out his ideas were, he still knew that there was a good chance that they would fail and that he would, well, most likely die. But the fact that he set it up to die at the hands of someone he respects personally does show you the sense of character he has, because instead of being judged by the civil system, the very system that didn't label him a criminal because of its own broken mechanism, shows you that at the end of the day, he wanted to die on his if he was going to die, he was going to die on his term. And that's very admirable because it pretty much illustrates the importance of the individuality he valued. And it's the same individuality I value because I recently did an interview with an FBI agent, Jim DiIorio, and you could check out the link down below. And in addition to multiple geopolitical matters, we also talked about a lot of social matters going on in the current culture, like social media, or how people nowadays are not interested in complexity. They're just interested in the simple context of any issue. And we did talk about how economics plays a factor in that because it has to do with the amount of time people are willing to spare on work or responsibilities as opposed to genuine curiosity. And this goes beyond having the time, investing your own personal time in reading, when really it's more to do with just the willfulness to understand that You're never going to get the full truth of any matter you take an interest in. But to take a simple snippet of something, rather than understanding that it is far more complex than you could ever garner, is something to take into account. Because if you think that you're going to get the absolute truth by looking at a YouTube, TikTok, or Instagram short, that's just like a lazy way of understanding that the world is chaotic, complex, and it's not always driven or at the helm of some conspiracy theory by some evil cabal. Now, when it comes to conspiracy theories, I tend to stand on the middle ground. Do I think that there are some limited forces of power out there that dictate the way the world works? I'm not saying that there aren't individual bad actors, because there's always going to be bad actors in every factor, every facet, every measure of an infrastructure that you can imagine. Jim and I discussed that with regards to the FBI, because although I've been critical of the CIA and the FBI on a personal level, I also understand that there are individual actors out there, you know, within those institutions, who are both good and evil. And I even discussed in my conversation how, even though I disagree with an individual like Andrew Bustamante on Edward Snowden, I have a lot of respect for him, his intelligence, and even when it comes to the subject of Edward Snowden, the fact that the way he disagrees with you is that he disagrees with you in a way where he doesn't treat your intelligence like something to belittle. He gives you a kind of answer that respects your intelligence while maintaining his level of conviction. And I think that when you have your own level of conviction within a matter and you express it to somebody in a way where you're not belittling their own level of conviction, shows the true mark of the kind of individuality the world is missing, whether you're a good person or a bad person. Anyway, I've rambled on enough about my love for a psychopath like Shogo Makashima and Alex DeLarge, and hopefully those of you listening have not given and have not derived or formulated the idea that I might be a psychopath, although I've had some sociopathic moments from time to time. That's another episode for another day. That being said, though, I hope you all enjoyed my ramblings on highly complex characters, and I hope you look forward to the many other characters, films, books, whatever topics or whatever people I interview that interest me in future episodes. I hope you all check out the sponsors of this podcast, Spotify for Podcasters, Fountain, as well as the Bitcoin buying links I've left down below. And if you're feeling generous, although generosity is a given nowadays, check out the Patreon and donate what you can to support and help grow this podcast and something more than just this moron on his smartphone headphones rambling, like as if he was an intellectual rather than just a wannabe pseudo-intellectual. Anyway, till next time.